But we do want to say from the depths of our hearts, we really appreciate the concern and the fellowship that the saints here have shown towards the work in El Salvador. And we want to say that there is coming a day when maybe those at home, those who have stayed by the stuff and faithfully held up our hands in prayer and also maintained the work in a practical way, the day is coming when the one who will do just to everyone, who will give to everyone his own reward, he will see to it that each one will receive his due reward. And so we want to thank you for it's been a big encouragement, and I know there's been times in our experience down there when our knees have shaken one against the other, and we just lift up our eyes to heavenward, and the thought crosses maybe there's somebody up there in Vancouver or in the north that at this time is just also seeking to be partners with us in this work. And the prayers tonight have really encouraged me. I have enjoyed very much the exercise. Only one thing has touched my heart. One thing has especially caught my attention. I'm not criticizing in any way, but I heard a brother say, send forth laborers. Well, sometimes we can send forth laborers, but I wonder if we're really willing to say, Lord, if it be thy will, send me. I mean, we can cry to the Lord to send out the laborers, but just so long as you don't touch me, I'm all right. And it's a lot easier to do that. But when it touches home, and that's the most touchy thing, is when it touches ourselves, I wonder if we'd be willing to tell the Lord, Lord, if it be thy will, send me. I'm willing to go. Put yourselves at the Lord's orders. And if it's his will, he'll open the way for you. But of course, if we don't put ourselves at his disposal, then there's no way that he's going to force us out into the work. He's not going to push you out there. He's going to lead you out there. He's going to go before you, but he'll never get behind you and push you. So you have to be in a willingness to follow him. He will set out the pathway for you if you're willing to just follow him. Of course, there is I'm not trying to be here to recruit anybody. I'm not in that category. Only the Spirit of God. I once mentioned this, and it was a lesson to me. One brother, I was encouraging, you know, about telling him about the great need in El Salvador. This was the last time we were home, and so I got a little bit. He didn't tell me himself, but it came by the grapevine, which is a good way of getting news around. But to somebody else, he said, "Who does Jack think? He's the Holy Spirit." Well, it hit kind of home, kind of hard, because I didn't mean it in that sense. I really was trying to encourage the brother. Well, somebody with that spirit, the Lord will never send out. It's somebody who's got a heart, and when they hear a word of encouragement, they are thankful for it. I know that before I went out, I certainly was thankful for the encouragement that my brethren gave me. As Brother Bill well said, I certainly didn't feel capable. I wasn't even as Moses. I mean, Moses had the ability, and he just had the humility to go along with it, to recognize that he really wasn't prepared for such a large step. But nevertheless, we were just taught to cast ourselves in the Lord's hands, and if this was his will, he would not only make it real from his word to us to assure us that this is the pathway that he would have for us, but also he would lead us into that land with the approbation of our brethren, with their commendation. And I remember coming home from El Salvador. I'm repeating probably some of this to some of you that don't know, or that know, but just for the sake of some of the new ones here and just how you go about it, I thought maybe tonight I would tell you a little bit of how the Lord led me into the work of the Lord that may encourage someone here to really look to the Lord for guidance in case that your heart is open to the leading of the Lord to send you forth. Maybe not into El Salvador, although if the Lord sends you there, I'll tell you where there's a real open door. And if you don't mind the sound of the guns going off and the bullets going through the air, if the Lord sends you there, you don't have to worry about the bullets or the bombs or anything else. This is what has encouraged us, and what has kept us there is not only we have never received a go home from the Lord as signal, but we have felt that we have a need. There is a great need, probably a need greater now than there ever has been, especially amongst the Lord's dear people who are passing through deep times of trial and affliction there because of the situation. And we would plead with you to at least pray for them very earnestly. Some of them are, many of them have been without jobs, and some of them suffering, maybe only eating once a day, and sometimes not even once a day because of the great scarcity and the economic complete failure of the economic system in El Salvador. So we would ask your prayers for them. But in regards to the Lord's work, we are thankful to say that when we did go, when we did put ourselves at the Lord's orders, as it were, at the first we were really exercised about the work of the Lord in Venezuela. This was where our heart was. We lived there for 15 years of our life. And we kind of, ever since the Lord saved me, although I never told my wife anything about this exercise, my thoughts ever since the Lord saved me was maybe the Lord someday will send me to the work in Venezuela, where my heart, where we had grown up and where our heart really was to begin with. But then we found that this wasn't, we never got the green light from headquarters, as it were, and we just kept waiting upon the Lord. Well, the opportunity to go down with Brother Doug Reed to El Salvador came up. At that time yet, I didn't have any real concern about going to El Salvador to labor for the Lord full time. I just left my work for a few months, and I told my boss that I'd be back. And he kindly gave me leave of absence to go for 3 months. And I went, even though I had just changed jobs just 2 months prior. I asked for 3 months, and I thought, well, they'd fire me, because just working 2 months and asked for 3 months leave, it just wasn't proper that I'd get my job back. And so when I went in, he said, well, he says, if nobody else comes, he says, you'll have your job. He says, we appreciate the work that you've done in this little time that you've worked here. I was in another company, and it was, they wanted me to do something that I really didn't feel was honoring to the Lord. Make people, buy something that they don't really need. And I told them my convictions, and so they told me that I had to leave. Well, I left it with the Lord, and as soon as I wasn't home one day, and I got a phone call from another Ford agency saying, I hear you're out of a job. Come on down. We'll put you in here somewhere. And I never even asked anybody for a job. I just left it in the Lord's hands, and I got there and I got twice the pay that I was getting in the other place. So I was real thankful to the Lord for that, and it was a real answer to prayer. But then when this going down to El Salvador came up, and actually when I got the job, I didn't tell the man anything about that. I already had my thoughts of going down there, because we had to make certain preparations, and I had talked to Brother Doug about it, and he was overjoyed about me accompanying him down there. So we went. So I went down with Brother Doug Reed to help him see, spy out the land and see what the needs were to come down there, the requirements were to come down there to live. Since we couldn't communicate with anybody down there, there was no place to, nobody to speak to. So we got, when we arrived there, we found a brother from Guatemala that had been there for 12 years, working in the laboring there, but he was an older man, and really his disposition wasn't one to attract the gospel. He preached, he was very faithful in preaching the gospel, but his disposition wasn't any to attract anybody to the gospel. He was very, very sober looking, and no smile about him. The way he presented himself to people, people said, well, if that's what the gospel does to you, I don't want it. You know, this sort of thing. And he was a faithful in his work for the Lord, but his disposition was something that he hadn't been able to really conform to his work for the Lord. But anyhow, we worked with him, and the Lord gave us the joy of seeing a few souls saved. And I'll tell you, when the fever of souls gets a hold of you, it's pretty hard to get rid of that fever. And you don't want to get rid of that fever. You want to keep it on. It's one fever that you like to hang on to. And I cry to the Lord, Lord, never let me lose this fever for seeing souls saved. And anyhow, we worked for quite a while there. And I want to encourage some of the saints here in Richmond, because it was through their exercise that the Lord really laid it on my heart to come back, to return to the work of the Lord there. It was marvel how in a little short time we were there, we decided the last month to start on a hall. The brother needed a hall to where to preach. So we got together Brother Doug, and we started praying. We didn't have the wherewithal to start to build a hall, and the brother there, he had nothing. So what we were going to build it from? Well, the Lord had to do it. There was no other way. And so we just cried to the Lord. But I don't like to put the Lord on the spot like that, you know, to give him a date that you have to set. But we felt that by a certain date, if we hadn't the funds to start building, we didn't have time from that day on to build a hall. So we had to more or less come to that conclusion that if the funds weren't there to build a hall, well, by that date, there was nothing. Well, the day came, and went down to the post office box, and there was nothing there in the morning, so we said, well, we'll go back in the afternoon. Of course, the post office is the nicest building to a missionary any time. You know, it can be the most run-down shack in the whole town, but it's the prettiest building to a missionary, because it's his encouragement and the way he can get his guidance. One of the ways, not the only way, but one of the ways he can... No, I'm thankful to the Lord that the life of faith... You know, some of these others that go out into the work of the Lord that have a salary... They could never do. I mean, they can't understand why we can go into a place and start to build a hall. I mean, the people don't have any money to build that hall. They wonder where we get it. And, of course, when we tell them that we never ask for a cent, we never tell anybody about our needs, we just leave it to the Lord. If the funds are there, we'll build it. If we're not, well, we just can't build it. But anyhow, this afternoon we went and we opened the box and there was two letters. Well, we had set the Lord $500 that we needed to start to build that hall. I mean, you can't build it on $500, but we felt that if we had $500, we could get started, and if the Lord provided $500, He'd provide the rest. So we got two letters, one for Brother Doug and one for me. I had never received any letter up till that time. And so he opened his letter. And lo and behold, I'm telling you something personal, but I don't think Brother Doug will mind. Some of his family's here tonight, so. But we opened the letter, his letter, and lo and behold, it checked for $250. So, I thought, well, we won't make it on that. So I opened my letter, and surely nobody would send me $250, and opened the letter, and lo and behold, $250. There was the $500 that they had asked the Lord, and it had to have been in the mail before we even asked for it, for the Lord. So the verse, before you will call, I will answer with a real message to my heart in that way, how the Lord answers prayer. And I want to give an encouragement to those who are a little bit doubtful of what the Lord can do. He will answer. He's a God answering prayer. He won't give us all our wants, but He has promised to meet all our needs. And He knows your needs. And if He doesn't supply for that need, it's because you don't need that. You may think you need something, but if He doesn't supply the need, then it's not His will that you have it, because He said, my God shall supply all your needs according to His riches in Christ Jesus. I'll never forget one time a brother did send me a check, and he signed his name. He says, I'm just sending you a gift. He signed his name and sent the check. Put it Jack Saylor, but he left the check open. And I thought, well, when I opened that, it was a little strange, you know. It was kind of hard to write back to the brother and say, well, what did you mean this check for? There's no number on it. And so it was difficult for me to write back to him, but I somehow or other got the courage up to write back to the brother. And he writes to me, well, he says, I intended it that way. He says, you put in any figure you want. I thought, well, here's my chance. But really, I didn't take advantage of it. I felt there was something that we needed at that time, at that special moment, and I used it for that. I bought the thing with that check. And later he told me, he says, brother, he says, I'm ashamed of you. He says, how little you wrote that check for. He says, I thought that you would write it for a far greater figure. He says, you would have been quite welcome to do it. Well, I wrote back and I thanked him very much, but I said, you did need a specific need at that time, and I was really appreciated of his confidence in us to do a thing like that. Of course, it was the only time I've ever had a thing like that happen, but it was a real encouragement to me, and I tell it to you as well for your encouragement and your prayer for those who have gone forth. Well, anyhow, while we were down there, one of the obstacles, I'm getting carried away here, but I think that press will be a little bit of help. We'll leave a little bit of time for telling a little of the work. But while we were there, one of the obstacles, as I said, was that I wondered if my wife would go along with our thoughts of coming back to that land to labor for the Lord. Because when we got married, she says, when we were going together, she says, there's two persons I won't marry. In fact, she's not here tonight, but she'll probably hear with this tape going on here. But she says, there's two persons I would never marry. I'll never marry a salesman, and I'll never marry a preacher. Well, that stuck with me. I was going to get over that hurdle before too long. I would have to face up to it. Of course, I'd passed the first hurdle because I became as kind of a salesman for Ford Motor Company. And so she had to put up with that. And I thought, well, she put up with that very faithfully. Maybe she'll put up with preaching. But it's not just a case of putting up with it. I felt the Lord had to touch her heart too. Because when you are going into a work, you don't just go to be his husband, to be a help to him. You go there because you feel too a conviction with him through the work of the Lord in that land. Because I know my wife wouldn't have remained down there these years and stuck with it with me if it wasn't that the Lord had really called her to that land as well. And I have to acknowledge that many times I was in the East and we were very concerned because some of the things that were being carried on in the city would turn anybody's hair white overnight. And we were really, really concerned for them, for their welfare, because she knew that I was out in the East and there was problems out there And there was no way of communicating back and forth, just through the throne of grace. That was the only way. Her at her end and me at my end, and we both met in the middle. We were able to form the triangle of prayer. And that way, the Lord was a great comfort to us, of course, when we were able to communicate by La Union by phone was fine, but a lot of times the terrorists cut the phone lines and there was no communication, and of course the radio, you couldn't get anything through the radio because the radios are all, programs are all censored there, and they're not allowed to give out news regarding the problem in the country. But to make a long story short, we wrote her a letter and told her about our exercise. Of course, we put it in, and then after we put it in, we wanted to take it out of the box because we were a little bit sorry that we'd put it in. But there it was. We stuck it in. So we just left it with the Lord. And of course, the time passed. That was the longest 3 weeks of my life, I think, I ever passed waiting for the reply to that letter. And it finally came. Of course, I always, when I got a letter from my wife, I always read the last part first. It's all sweetest, isn't it? And I knew that possibly the answer, she'd leave it till the last. Well, it so happened that she had, and she said, well, in regards to your exercise and your thoughts, the day that your letter came that morning, the Lord had, she had read the first chapter in the book of Ruth, and she had read that verse, where thou livest, I will live, and where thou diest, I will die. And there will I be buried. That was a strange verse, but she says it just stuck out like a sore thumb when she read it that morning. She had read it many times, but it just stuck out. She wondered why the Lord had kind of brought that verse out to her. Well, of course she knew it after the day was, when she got the letter, what the Lord had written for her, and it was the answer what you are, and she wrote right down. She says, well, that's my answer. I feel that that's where the Lord would have you be. We're one in the Lord, and that's where He would have me to be as well. Well, thank the Lord. That was the end of that hurdle. I was walking on air, and also I felt before the Lord that before I went out into the work of the Lord, I don't put this as a fast rule. It was my own conviction that those, the children that the Lord had given me, to be saved before I went out in the Lord's work. I felt that that was my first missionary field, and I felt a responsibility towards my children. And so while I was down there, one day in the mail, of course I had told Brother Doug, this is one of my concerns and one of my exercises, and of course he tried to encouraged me otherwise, but I had put it before the Lord that if it was His will, my children would both be saved before we went to the foreign field. And one day I got a letter in the mail from my son, the only one I ever got. And in that letter, first words, Dad, I got saved tonight. It was the sweetest words in my ears. And I thank the Lord for His grace, and of course, right there in the post office, Brother Doug come and put his hands on my shoulder. He says, did your son get saved? He says, how'd you know? He says, well, he says, I was praying to the Lord that He would come in. 4 days or 5 days, I forget now, later I got a letter from my daughter, and the first line is, Dad, I got saved. Believe me, those were two letters that I'll never forget. And after that, well, we decided that we were building the hall. As I say, we got done with the hall. And just one day before we left, the hall was finished. And we walked out on Don Valentin. We had just one meeting in that hall. We thought, well, that's kind of a shame, you know, spend a month building a hall. But it wasn't in vain. We're still using that hall today. The Lord has certainly blessed the work. We have moved that hall to another area, to the new hall, and it has been a wing on the new hall. And it has been a real blessing. It's still standing there. And it's a kind of a, what do you call it? As the word goes in English. Anyhow, it's there as a landmark of our first work in El Salvador. And I don't know if we'll ever have the heart to tear it down. And of course, the city wants us to put up a brick building, a cement building, because we don't allow wooden buildings. But there still, the Lord we've been able to satisfy the requirements of the city and the things that they have asked us to do to it. So there it stands in the city. Well, the next hurdle that I had to do was, of course, the brethren. And I came home wondering just what the brethren, how the brethren would feel about it, about me going out in the Lord's work. And so the first Sunday I was at a meeting. It was a Thursday night, I'm sorry. We were at meeting that night. And as we were going out the door, I was going to stop Brother Garrett, her horse, to ask him if we could have a little word with the brethren about our exercise, about going out in the Lord's work. Before I kind of stumbling and kind of mumbling, wanted to tell him and shook his hand. He says to me, "Brother Jack," he says, "when are you going back to El Salvador?" Just like that. "When are you going back to El Salvador?" I said, "Well, I really wanted to have a little conversation with the brethren here in regards to our exercise." He said, "Brother, there's no need for that." He says, "We've been praying that the Lord might send you back there ever since you went back down there." So there was, even though we did have a conversation with the brethren to let them know how the Lord had dealt with us through the scriptures and also circumstances, and they were very, very happy to commend us to the work of the Lord. So that will give you a little inkling of how the Lord laid us. And also, in regards to going down there, Brother Doug, of course, was going to go down with us. And we had applied for our entry into El Salvador, and it had come right through. Brother Doug had also made his application, but there was no word on it. And we had stopped our job. In fact, we went back to the shop, and of course, my manager, when he came in, I went back to the job after I came back to El Salvador and worked for a little while. And, but it just wasn't the same. Of course, I hadn't told them about our exercise, and I worked there for about a month and a half at the shop, and my mind just was a little farther away than Robinson Lyon Ford. And I was there working one day. I was walking down the main aisle to give an order to one of the mechanics, and the boss, he come the other way. I was just coming back to the front of the building. He was coming. Of course, I was staying clear of him because I was sure he was going to ask me something. And so he just headed right. I kept going this way, and he kept going towards me, and we finally met face to face. He said, "Jack," he says, "I want to ask you something." He says, "You're not the same person." He says, "What's wrong?" I said, "What's wrong? Am I not doing my job?" No, he says, "No problem." He says, "You're doing your job fine." He says, "We appreciate your job." He says, "But I want to know what's on your mind." He says, something's bothering you." He says, "I want to know." So I said, I once again tried to make the things of the shop be the problem. He says, "That's not the problem." He says, "Tell me the truth." I said, "Well," I says, "you won't understand," I said, "but I'm thinking about going back to El Salvador." That's just what I thought. And so he took me in to see the big boss upstairs, and I went in and talked to him, and he tried every way. He tried to, in fact, he offered me the double of what I was earning, and I was already earning a good big amount, more than some of the salesmen up on the front floor selling cars. I was making good wages, and I was very satisfied with my wages. So I told him that. He said, "Well," he says, "how much are they going to pay you?" And I says, Oh, I've got a real rich father. I said, where's your father? I said, he's a missionary in Venezuela, my earthly father, but that's not the one I depend upon. I says, I depend upon my heavenly father. But he says, no, he says, I know that. He said, but how much are they going to pay you? I says, there's no wage in this business. I says, we live by faith. He just scratched his head. Well, he says, Jack, he says, I thought you were a real smart fella, but he says, I'm beginning to think something else. He says, I think you're crazy going down there on that condition. He says, I think you should not go unless you really, and he says, we'll meet any wage that your church puts on. He says, we'll meet it. He says, we're glad to have you working here for us. And so I thank him very much for his confidence and for his appreciation of our work, but I says, I'm heading down. Well, he says, that's all right. He says, you try it for a year. You try it for a year. He says, and when you come back, he says, you'll have your job. I says, thank you very much. That's a good thing, you know. A year? He gave me a year trial. So I stayed down there, of course, for the at least 5 years. The last time we came home, and I thought I'd go out and visit my old boss, and I went out there. And of course, I walked right in, and he was sitting in his office, and his big smile right across his face. He says, you didn't come back in a year, but he says, I'm sure glad you came back in 5 years. He says, your job is still here. Well, I says, I'm not here to look for a job. I says, I'm just here to let you know that God has taken care of me. And I says, I haven't died of hunger. And I said, I haven't asked for a red cent. I says, if you don't think that that's well enough, I says, you just keep your own thoughts to yourself. And we just left. We learned on good terms. And that was it. In fact, through him, we got a good deal on our vehicle in which to travel down there to El Salvador. He was happy to help us out. Not that I got anything for nothing from him, because he was a Jew at heart, and he took everything that he could, even off the missionaries, but I couldn't accept anything for free from an unsaved person, and you can't expect anything from an unsaved person. But that's the way we went back to labor for the Lord, and the Lord has certainly helped us in our labors for himself. Well, I was going to give a little message of encouragement, but maybe that will suffice to help the saints here in their encouragement, as they would know the real labor that's involved before you even go out in the Lord's work, because you have to wrestle with God. I tell you, it wasn't easy to know the, because when Brother Doug told me, go on, Brother Jack, you're ready to go, get going. He says, I'll be on my way in about 2 weeks. Well, we got there down 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, no Brother Doug yet. And when we heard, of course, that he was heading down for, going right by us, down into Costa Rica. Well, the Lord blessed him, and the Lord continued to bless him. We were thankful that somebody went into that land. And we had been praying to the Lord that as the Lord had led us there, there was a need in Costa Rica. And there's also even a need today in other countries such as Panama. There's no workers from the assemblies there, and a real open door for the gospel. But of course, in El Salvador, being the country that we love, we would like to say, if you have an exercise, we trust the Lord will continue to increase this exercise and lead you forth into that land, because the door is still wide open for the gospel. There is absolutely no restriction of any kind for the preaching of the gospel. In fact, the government has got to the place where they realize that it's the gospel the country needs. And so they help us out in every way to protect us in our meetings. Sometimes even some cops will stand by, policemen will stand by to protect, to make sure that there's no harm done, especially when any open air work is done. But even in the halls, sometimes even private policemen, detectives will come and sit in the halls just to make sure, because there has been sometimes the terrorists will come right into a church building and take over the platform and give a message from the platform about communism and so on. And that we're thankful to say that none of our meetings, even though some of the sects of this has happened to them, none of the meetings associated with the gospel halls in El Salvador have been affected in this way. So we're thankful to the Lord for His protective hand in this manner. In regards to the land of El Salvador, those that don't see it, I'm glad that the sister that drew this map up for me exploded it quite a few times. You can see here, 12 inches is 18 miles. And so it really exploded map, and I'm glad she did it because you wouldn't be able to see it. You'll see a little scale over here. This little land of El Salvador is not very big. It's the smallest of the countries of Central America. It's quite a bit smaller than Nicaragua and Honduras. It's about five times smaller than Honduras and about six times smaller than Nicaragua and about five times smaller than Guatemala. It's about two times, a little better than two times smaller. Costa Rica is two times bigger than El Salvador. But it's also the most highly populated country, the seventh most densely populated country in the whole world. India, even though with all its population, there's a density of 556 people per square mile in India. In El Salvador, there's 605 people per square mile. So you've got even a greater density in that little country there than in the land of El Salvador, or in the land of India. But the only country that compares to El Salvador in size is the little land of Israel. And Israel is about the same size as El Salvador, and they have a density of population of 500 per square mile in Israel. So it gives you a little idea of the size of the country. It's not very big. It fits into BC 44 times. So you can, that can give you a little idea, and into the state of Washington about eight times. The country itself is very mountainous. This part, in fact, pretty well, all this part up here is all mountains. The only part that's really fairly flat is this part right in here. This part, you see this side of this highway that goes here. It's the second main highway. This is the Pan-American Highway that comes all the way from Vancouver right down to the point of Argentina. Other than just a little spot here in Panama where they have to take a barge for about 250 miles and barge the cars around, and then they take the Pan-American Highway that goes all the way down. This highway here was built a lot with U.S. dollars, of course, interested in getting a Pan-American Highway. This highway along the coast was built later, but there was a large bridge here. I'm sure that you heard about it. It's right there, somewhere in this land here, between Sacatecoluca and Usulután. There's a large bridge that's called the Golden Bridge, and because it's the cost of it, the large span, but a little bit larger than the Lion's Gate Bridge, and it's the same type of bridge, and this was blown up by a terrorist, and they had tried several times before to dynamite it, but it was such a heavy structure that it was always a failure there. But the last time they did a real good job of it. I don't know how many hundred tons of dynamite they put on the bases, and it just blew the thing apart, and there was no way of recovering it. It was a total loss, and they're right now in the midst of trying to rebuild it, but of course it's the economy of the country. The only way they could do it is if the government, or any outside country would send help, and the U.S. has sent help apparently to restore that highway. It's a very, very, much less, hills in this part, and a lot of trucks go this way. But, and then after the terrorists blew this, bridge up, then they wanted to also blow one up here at Puente Cuscatlan. That's also across the same river that flows right through, it's one of the main rivers that flows right through to the ocean, and they have failed to do that, but they have been all through this. They stop the vehicles on this on this road, blow up hundreds of trucks and buses and private cars that go on there, and just to cause confusion and chaos. They'll just burn them up, and a lot of times kill even the drivers of these buses. It's really sad. I mean, not only to destroy property, but also to take human life. Of course, communism really doesn't have any value for lives. If it furthers their cause, they'll pay any price, even the life of a person or even a family. It doesn't cost them anything to destroy a life. And this is the thing that we have noticed, in even though possibly the news up here has been otherwise. Down there, if a government kills a person, it'll usually be one person. They'll go in there and, especially if the terrorist or subversive is against him, he'll shoot at him, and of course there's a fight starts, and usually the terrorist dies from it. But that's just one case. They'll never go in, and we've never heard of a government going in and wiping out a whole family, but the terrorists will. They'll go in order to cover up their steps. They'll go in and take a whole family. For instance, if a man has once, maybe he worked for the government 10 years ago, but that's enough for them to go ahead and take his life and take his wife and maybe 8 or 9 children, some of them even in cribs, and just shoot them. And a lot of times they're very cruel, and they'll take out the eyes and cut out the tongues of these people before they even are dead. It's just real cruel. This is what how they go about it. And of course, if they get a soldier and they get him alive, I pity that poor soldier, because there's been many of them tortured to no end, even cut to pieces, their whole body, and just the last, of course, they leave the last vital thing till the very last. They'll cut off their legs and cut off their arms and do everything to them and then they'll leave it where everybody can see it and put the uniform, or at least the insignia of the soldier, where everybody can see it. So it's been a cruel world, war this last 3 years, because of course it's not a case of fighting another nation, but it's fighting a cult, a devilish cult that is seeking to take over all of Central America, including the other Central American countries. The little country of Nicaragua has been taken over mostly by the communists. Their fight for the war at the beginning, their freedom, I feel was justified. It went off on the right course, and I feel Costa Rica backed them up, and I have a feeling that it was a desire to get the dictatorship of Somoza off of there and establish a democratic rule. But of course the communists took advantage of it. As soon as Somoza was out of the picture, then they came in and took possession. And now it's really a communistic state with many communists from Cuba and Russia in there doing the work of establishing their doctrine in the country, in the schools, and even in the churches. You mentioned last night that There is a brother down in Costa, in Nicaragua that was jailed because of his testimony for the Lord Jesus. And he was jailed, and there in the jail he sought to still testify for the Lord Jesus, and he was taken out by the soldiers and shot. Claim the body, and they wouldn't give it to him. So I would, and now last we heard, they're not even letting her leave the country because they don't want her to testify in the other countries, apparently, what has happened to her husband. That word did leak out what had happened, and so I would ask you to pray for this dear sister who is passing through that trial, not only of losing her husband, but having to stay there under those conditions, and even though she's not in jail, she's just not allowed to go out of certain areas of the city for fear that she might leave the country. Now, in regards to the work of the Lord in El Salvador during these last 6.5 years since we were last here, the Lord has added another couple of assemblies, which we are very grateful for. In fact, I might mention that there's another assembly, 3 altogether, assembly that the brethren from San Miguel, an exercise of the brethren here, were visiting before the problems began 3 years ago, the terrorists taking stand in El Salvador and really overtaking the country. One reason why communism has so taken over the country is because there's such that the vast majority of the people are very poor. And of course this is where communism thrives, is where the people haven't got anything, and they just, communism comes in and offers them the whole world and tells them, well, you're going to get this and you're going to get this if you back us up. And of course, they look at it this way, well, we haven't got nothing to lose, they can't take anything away from us, so there might be the opportunity that we might get something out of this. And so a lot of them have tried to back them up until they find out just what communism has. There's several that have been able to escape the various camps that the terrorists have let out, and have come and testified before reporters even in the city of the terrorism, the terror that these communists are, the way they treat the people that are in there, even torturing those that have backed them up. If they disobey one law of the commander of the camp, he's beaten. And if he disobeys again, he's thrashed 10 times. And the third time, if he disobeys the third time, you'll never see him again. That's the end of him. They finish him off. And they're just kept under a constant threat. And of course, if they try to escape, they never get a second chance to try and escape. That's enough to finish them off right there. And all around the camp, it's all mined. They have to be very careful before they walk, because of course they have it mostly for the people, for the soldiers going in, but also for those who are trying to escape. So a lot of them, some of them have escaped and have told these gruesome stories that have gone on with the terrorists. But in this little country, at a village here, it's the town between Las Delicias and Manguera. I haven't even got it listed there. These brethren have gone up there and have preached the gospel before the time was, and then, of course, when the terrorists took over this land, this part of the country here, then the brethren were no longer able to get in there. So, but they did leave the standard an assembly established there before they left. They felt that there was sufficient material there for an assembly. There was about, I forget whether seven or eight brethren there, and a number of sisters. And even though they're simple brethren, they felt that they could not get out to San Miguel for the breaking of bread And they had all the other meetings there at that time. Anyhow, the only meeting they came out to San Miguel for was for the breaking of bread and meeting. And so it was, they had felt that at that time the Lord was leading to establish the testimony to His name there. There's a brother in that assembly, the only one. He comes out every once in a while, every couple of weeks or once a month to the assembly in San Miguel and reports how things are going. And he said they've seen a few souls saved since the brethren have gone, not been able to get in there, which has been a real encouragement to these brethren because they thought, well, let's send them in. This brother, he's a real worker, and he has kept at the work there. And the brethren of San Miguel do help him very much because he's left his material work to dedicate his time to helping the saints and to propagate the gospel, even though he's not really a commanded work from the assembly. The assembly of San Miguel has just taken on, especially during this interval while this problem is, to leave him in charge of the work in that area. And when he comes into San Miguel, he buys a few loaves of bread and a few sacks of goodies, something that he knows that the terrorists like. And when he gets ready to go back in, of course he starts giving out this to this man and this to that, and they all forget about who he is, and just let on he goes his way and gets back into his circle with his brethren there again. So he's been a real help to the saints there. He's been over to the city and often comes and visits us at the home, and we've talked to encourage him and instruct him in a few things that he was needing to know as far as assembly truths and so on, that they were having a few problems. So this assembly here, as well as one here in Gavilancito, and one in a place called Jucuapa, where there's a nice little company of believers. Some live here in Nueva Guadalupe, but they walk. They don't have any transportation. They walk from here to Jucuapa. They go one day and come back the next. It's about a walk for them. From there, it's about 40, maybe not quite, maybe about 28 miles from there, and they walk across here from here to Jucuapa. Usually just go on Sundays, because, and they have the other meetings in Nueva Guadalupe. There's a nice little hall in which they meet there in Nueva Guadalupe, the things in the cities. This assembly in El Gavilancito is also in a very precarious place because the terrorists are all around this area here. There's a big mountain here just behind where the assembly is that is just taken completely over. It's mined underneath. They have doors caved in the mountain from several angles, and the army up to the present time has been unable to break their control of that area. And they come out quite often and stop the vehicles and take, of course, all the possessions. Sometimes they'll rob everything that's in the vehicle, especially if it's food or anything. They'll completely unload the truck and tell the man to go on his way. Of course, there's nothing. We ourselves have not been really molested too much, other than a couple of times as we were stopped on the road, but thankfully the Lord delivered us out of the hands of these men. I don't know just what they would have done with an American, let alone a Canadian, but we were thankful that they didn't trouble us. The Lord, just at the last moment, just as we were coming up to where they had their hold up, we were just two or three cars back. We were just getting ready to have them do whatever they wanted to us. And all of a sudden we heard a couple of shots and the terrorists disappeared on each side of the road, and we have to make our way around a big truck and trailer that they had blown the tires up and crossed the highway, and we had to get around the truck and trailer and go on our way again. Believe me, as I say, we were shaking on our knees even, and our prayers were going up to the Lord at that moment that he would deliver us from wicked and unreasonable men. The work here has grown in El Gavilancito to a real, real encouragement. It's added to their hall 3 times, and they're still wanting to make another addition now. And we've been encouraging to take down completely the old one and start afresh, because by the time you add on to a hall 3 times, it doesn't look like much of anything. And so they're thinking of possibly building a more permanent building. Right now it's mainly just built up of cardboard and just sticks sticking up with a few poles to hold up the brick roof. In fact, I'm a little afraid to go in there because of heavy tiles on the roof and just small rafters to keep them up. It's a little bit shaky, and every time that even it thunders, the whole building shakes like this. But it's good to see their exercise before the Lord to carry on the work in that place. Now, the work here in Los Piotes has also given us much encouragement. The same fair has not suffered too much from terrorist activity, and as a result, they have about 4 outreaches in the gospel. It's pretty busy every night of the week. Not quite as busy as the brethren here in San Miguel. These brethren in San Miguel have about 12 outreaches in the gospel. And even with all the terrorism is going on, they keep at these outreaches, and some of the brethren go one place because there's not enough days in the week. They have a meeting every night of the week, and their own meetings, of course, in the hall as well as these others. But they come to an agreement who's going to go where, and everybody is in full vigor to do whatever the Lord places in their hands to do. But the brethren here in Los Piotes, they also have their activity, as well as the ones here in Aguas Escondido. We had a nice, the Lord gave us a nice increase. So in a special effort we had there at the close of this last year, in Fallitas, where the assembly in Aguas Escondido met at first, but it's proved much more suitable to have the assembly in Fallitas. So the hall was, the permanent hall was built in Fallitas, even though the assembly was established, first of all, in Aguas Escondido. Indeed, there are several of those that professed to be saved at that series, and that are now baptized and are in the meeting. Well, I've gone over time now, but I guess if I get my head cut off once, I won't have to do it again. It's just to let you know, here in San Salvador, there's a nice, the work is continues to increase in these two areas of Santa Lucia and Soyapango. The Lord is greatly blessed, and it's encouraging to see the exercise of the saints out here, and we trust it's not too long from now an assembly will be formed in that suburb of Santa Lucia, where there's a great many areas where there's a gospel, there's an ear for the gospel. The night before we left, we got the sad news of a young man who had an argument with his mother-in-law, and he had been out to hear the gospel. He was unsaved. He had an argument with his mother-in-law and walked out to the edge of the brim. And one of the brethren walked out behind, or another one of the brethren, a saved brother of his, went out to stop him and told him not to jump. But the man jumped instead, and he just, it's a steep precipice right down, and He got caught on a tree halfway down. He was still alive. So this brother, he got a hold of a strong rope and was just about to let himself down. One of the brethren from the assembly came running out. He says, "Don't do that." He says, That rope will never hold you. And he said, listen, I was a Boy Scout. I know these things. Just leave it to me. So he walked over and he got down to the tree where this man was, wrapped the rope around him, and he slipped, and both of them went down and were both killed. And this below, it was a real shock to some of the saints, because he was a brother to a sister in the meeting there, and a relative. The other one was a relative too, to some of the saints. So it was a real shock to them. But nevertheless, the Lord has been working. I've heard since some of those that witnessed that have since come to know Christ as the Savior. It was a waking blow to them. The assembly here in Isata and also in Metalillo is very, very encouraging, and also the work here in Sonsonate. There's no assembly here or in Isalco, but there's a nice work going on there. That's Sister Gladys Master, well, this is closed. She was laboring for the Lord in these two towns. The Lord greatly blessed her efforts there. We're very thankful that our sister did that work, and we're hoping that the Lord will lead her back to El Salvador again. We have a nice visit with her in Mexico on our way up. I believe now she's gone to Broadhead, Wisconsin, where she will wait further direction of the Lord in regards to going back to El Salvador, and I'm sure our sister will appreciate the prayers of the Lord's people here for her in this exercise. Her heart is really down there, but of course she had to leave because of a threat up before the Lord as a single sister, that she should leave for the time being. It gave her quite a jolt, as you can imagine, and we encouraged her, as that was what she felt, that she should leave for a while. But we trust that the Lord will lead her back to El Salvador again, as well as some of our brethren that have left that land. And we trust the Lord will raise up even others, maybe from West Richmond, to go